translation. In my opinion, this is all due to inevitable time, under whose control everyone in every planet is carried, just as the clouds are carried by the wind. So who knows who is speaking this verse? Do you know who's speaking? Who? Yes, Bhishma is speaking. And who is he speaking to? The Pandavas. Thank you. So just to put this verse a little bit in context, after the battle is finished, we hear in chapter 8 that Yudhisthira begins to lament. Krishna is preparing to go, and then Yudhisthira falls into a deep lamentation. He doesn't want to become coronated as the emperor. He wants to give the kingdom to Bhishma, and he wants to go to the forest to do penance, because he blames himself for the devastation caused, for all the widows created, all the men killed, the widows, the orphans. And he's thinking, this is all because of my greed. So each of his brothers preaches to him, Krishna preaches to him, but still his grief and his self-blame doesn't abate. So Krishna suggests, let's go see Bhishma. Let's see what he has to say. Let him instruct you. And there's a reason why Krishna wanted them to go to Bhishma. Two reasons. One is he wanted to fulfill Bhishma's desire to see him at his moment of passing. And the other is he wanted to glorify Bhishma. He wanted to show that sometimes his devotee can do something that even he can't. Krishna couldn't abate Yudhisthira's grief, of course by his own desire, but Bhishma will. So, and when they go to see him, to see them, Bhishma congratulates them. He's so happy to see the Pandavas. He's not blaming Yudhisthira, get out of my sight, you rascal, you're the one who... No, he says, oh, I'm so happy to see you, and I'm so happy that you won, and you deserve to win. In fact, you've been persecuted for years, even though you're blameless, even though you're religion personified, and you're protected by the Brahmins, you're protected by the Supreme Lord, you're protected by religion itself. I could never understand why you had to suffer so much. Because he can see Yudhisthira's heart. You've done these verses, by the way. Because he can see Yudhisthira's heart. Yudhisthira's blaming himself. And he's saying, you don't have to blame yourself. You are faultless. You're pious. You're sinless. So none of this has been your fault. Sometimes the Bhaktivedanta Manor internet services pops up on my screen, so I can't see. Yes, so then after assuring him that you're sinless, the question would remain in Yudhisthira's mind, if I'm sinless, why am I suffering? So why do people normally suffer? Why would normally someone be caught up in a catastrophe? What is the normal reason for suffering? Does anyone know? Karma? What kind of karma? We've done something wrong. It's bad karma. We're suffering for our past impieties. And Bhishma is saying to him, you're not suffering for your past impieties, you're pious, and you're sinless in this life, and from past lives you're pious. So then the question remains, well, why am I suffering so much? If I have no sins, why am I suffering? And that's when Bhishma speaks this verse. He says, in my opinion, it's just due to inevitable time. So let's see what, it's not due to your sins, it's due to inevitable time that you're suffering. So let's go to see what Prabhupada says on his purport. So I've broken the purport down into little bits so we can analyze what Prabhupada is saying. I'd like us actually all to read the purport together, if you don't mind. I'll also read it. I'd like you to hear your own voices speaking what Prabhupada is speaking so you can focus on what he's saying. So we'll start together. There is control by time all over the space within the universe, as there is control by time all over the planets. All the big, gigantic planets, including the sun, are being controlled by the force of air, as the clouds are carried by the force of air. Similarly, the inevitable color or time controls even the action of the air and other elements. Everything, therefore, is controlled by the supreme Kala, a forceful representative of the Lord within the material world. So, a couple of people, I'd like you to tell me what Prabhupada is saying here. Just the gist of what you understand. I'm going to start with ladies because they don't speak enough, in my view. Anyone would like to volunteer, or should I just pick on you? Annabelle, you want to have a go? If you don't want to, it's okay. If you're feeling... Let me... Do you want to have a go? Shall I wait for you, or shall I ask someone else?
I can only say this because I...
Okay,
color,
time controls everything. Thank you so much. One of the men would like you to tell me what you're understanding this to say. Prabhu, do you want to? Since you're taking the thing around, you can more easily do it. What is the purport? What is Prabhupada saying in this part of the purport?
So he's saying that the entire time controls everything. It's inevitable.
What does inevitable mean?
Inevitable means it is destined to happen.
You can't stop it.
You can't stop it, yes.
Very nice. So time controls everything, and no one can control time. And we hear in a few purports on, or maybe it's the next purport, I'll show you, that time is Krishna's agent. So really, Krishna's controlling everything. And when something is inevitable, there's no use lamenting. If I'm suffering for something I could have prevented, if I wasn't sinful, if I hadn't neglected my sadhana, then I can lament, oh, I blew it, I should have done this, I should have done that. But Bhishma is saying, there's nothing you could have done to stop this, because this was Krishna's desire. This had nothing to do with anything you did wrong. This was Krishna's desire. So I'm just going to share an evidence that time is indeed controlled by time, by Krishna. Really, he's saying this is all Krishna's design. So this is from the next purport. I'm stealing someone's thunder who is giving class tomorrow. So we can read it together. As far as the material or spiritual resources were required, there was no scarcity in the case of the Pandavas. Spiritually, the king himself was a symbol of religion. And above all of them, the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, was personally concerned with their affairs as the well-wisher. And yet, there were so many reverses on the side of the Pandavas. Despite all this, the Pandavas suffered so many practical reverses, which can only be explained as due to the influence of Kala, inevitable time. Kala is identical with the Lord himself. And therefore the influence of Kala indicates the inexplicable wish of the Lord himself. There is nothing to be lamented when a matter is beyond the control of any human being. So I understand Prabhupada is saying the Pandavas materially had done nothing wrong. They'd done everything they should have done materially. So they can't fault themselves. They can't say, oh, I was negligent in this, or I didn't qualify myself in this way, therefore things went wrong. Materially, they had covered every post. And they can't even say, spiritually, I didn't take shelter of Krishna. Spiritually, I didn't do my sadhana, that's why things went wrong. Because Prabhupada is saying, spiritually, they'd covered every post. In fact, they were being completely 100% protected and guided by Krishna. So they can't lament and think, I did something wrong spiritually, I offended someone, that's why I'm suffering. So the only other reason is Krishna wanted it. And why he wanted it, Bhishma is saying, I can't figure it out. I don't know why Krishna wanted you to suffer the way you suffered. I can't figure it out. But since it's something Krishna wanted, don't lament. Why shouldn't we lament if something happens by Krishna's will, not due to any fault or neglect of our own? If it's due to some neglect of our own, a little lamentation is good because it makes us think, I won't do that again, or I will do that next time. But if we've done everything we should do and still we suffer, why shouldn't we lament if it's Krishna's will?
Compassion for others?
But why shouldn't I lament? If Krishna arranges me to suffer, why is that? Why shouldn't I feel resentful to the Lord? Why shouldn't I get angry with Krishna? Why should I not in any way, why should I be okay with it? Bhagadatta, you put up your hand. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Krishna is all good. And whatever he does is for our ultimate good, because he's on the absolute platform. For him, when he makes us suffer, absolute platform, or he makes us so-called enjoy, it's all good. It's all good. There's a purport in the Gita, and I didn't bring my, I didn't cite it as an evidence here, but there's a purport where Prabhupada says Krishna is all good. So when something is being arranged by Krishna, a devotee who has faith that Krishna is all good doesn't lament. He knows this is ultimately for the good. It only looks not good right now. So let's carry on. This is the next part of the purport we're doing today, text 14. So we can read it together so you can hear your own voice. Thus, Yudhishthira should not be sorry for the inconceivable action of time. Everyone has to bear the actions and reactions of time as long as one is within the conditions of material world. So, not be sorry. What do you understand Prabhupada means when he says not be sorry? I'm going to ask a lady first. Jayanti, do you want to have a go? Because I know you're practiced at repeating. What does Prabhupada mean by not be sorry?
What Prabhupada means by saying...
Should not be sorry.
Oh, it should not lament.
Lament.
Should not feel that they're deprived in some way.
Yes. Don't lament. Don't think, oh, something went wrong for my life or I did something wrong. Why? Because inconceivable time, which is controlled by God, he wanted this to happen. So don't beat yourself up, Yudhishthira. Don't beat yourself up. This is something Krishna wanted. And then there's another point in this purport I'd like to ask one of the men. Everyone has to bear the actions and reactions of time as long as one is within the conditions of the material world. Sutapa Prabhu, would you understand that to me?
I think Prabhupada's explaining that there's a system that goes on in the material world and we're not independent. So as entities living within this all-powerful system of Krishna, we have to accept that we're not in control.
So the material world has a system, there's certain rules here, and that's going to happen, and none of us have control over that. Yes. I also wanted to pick up on this word in this section, everyone. So everyone says to me, both liberated and non-liberated souls, that even the liberated souls have to bear the actions and reactions of time. What to speak of us conditioned souls, at least those of us here who are conditioned. So Yudhishthira, we know, is a liberated soul. He's not just liberated, he's not just Brahma-Bhuta above the modes of nature, but he actually is a Mahabhagavat, he has an established relationship with Krishna. And yet, Prabhupada is saying that even he has to bear the actions and reactions of the material energy. So I have a question I'd like to put to you, a couple of questions, and I'm not going to give you my answer straight away, I will reveal my answer slowly. But one is, if even liberated souls, those who have an established relationship with Krishna, have to bear the actions and reactions of time, actually have to suffer whatever time brings our way, what's the advantage of becoming a liberated soul? Why bother trying to become a liberated soul or have an established... Because we're still going to have to bear. Bear means suffer, tolerate the difficulties given by time. So what would be your answer? Are you putting up your hand to answer the question? Go ahead.
Hare Krishna. Navin Krishna Prabhu, a couple of days ago, he was mentioning very nice class about how karma influences different personalities. And he said how karma functions on karmis, practicing devotees and liberated souls. So in this connection, liberated souls, They receive karma to teach others, but those negative reactions, so-called negative or positive reaction, doesn't mean anything to them. It means that they're on a spiritual transcendental level. Therefore, it's not a regular karma. So in terms of connection with time and action, it works differently for them. It's just like a class for others. Like, you should learn how I react to that so-called karma.
Wonderful. So you're saying that Navin Krishna Prabhu gave a class on this point, and he said how time works differently. It's doing a different function for different types of souls. For conditioned souls is acting in one way, liberated souls is acting another way, and the Mahabhagavats another way. Three distinctions or two distinctions? Three. So for the Mahabhagavats, it's just in order to give guidance and instructions to others. But the Mahabhagavat is not disturbed by it. He himself is not like he's experiencing suffering. Krishna's just using him as his model, what he wants other people to learn. Did he tell you about the other two? Do you want to tell us the other two as well? What is time doing for the liberated soul?
That's why I said the
liberated... Oh, liberated and Mahabhagavats is only for...
Okay, so... He mentioned three karmis, like those which are fully engrossed in the material nature.
Yeah.
Then the second class was devotees,
practicing devotees. Okay, and then the liberated.
Nitya siddhas, paramahamsas,
uttamadhikaris. That's such a nice reply, and I'm going to actually have some evidences to show you. Did he show you any evidences?
He was quoting scriptures.
Very nice. So I like to make sure you see it. So I will show you some evidences. Very nice reply. The other question, which I'm going to ask the ladies, if I'm going to suffer, why on earth, if I'm going to suffer anyway, whether I'm a liberated Nitya Siddha, or I'm a practicing devotee, or I'm a Kami, why bother being a practicing devotee? Because I'm going to have to suffer anyway. What's your light? He actually did touch on it, but what would be your light, ladies? Why bother practicing? Because you're going to have to suffer anyway. Any clues? No one? Go ahead.
You're going toward liberation, so even though you're going to suffer, is it more accepting? Because when you suffer in the material world or in the outside of the temple and stuff, it's you don't know why you're suffering. You're confused and it's a bit overwhelming, you know?
Yes.
And you've not really got anything to fall back on, but more... when you're here, when you're suffering, there's a lot of answers.
Yes.
And there's a lot of ways you can grow from it, if you know what
yes.
I mean. And you can, every time you suffer, you can see it as Krishna's arrangement and you can grow from it instead of think, why am I suffering? And stuff.
Yes.
You can,
Very nice answer. So you're saying, if we don't have knowledge and we're not practicing, we're not regularly hearing from Krishna or chanting his holy name, suffering just creates bewilderment and total anxiety and complete bewilderment and confusion. But when we're practicing, suffering becomes an impetus. You said we can grow from it. So I would put it in my own words, becomes an impetus for transformation, for personal transformation and growth. So suffering becomes an impetus for improvement, self-improvement. Did I understand you correctly? Yeah, are you sure? I did put it in my own words, but I was trying to capture your... hopefully your meaning. So let's carry on. I've got some lights on those two questions too, but they will be revealed. So this is an evidence why most people suffer. We'll read it together. You are suffering for sinful reaction. Suffering means if you disobey the laws of the state, you suffer. That is sinful. Because you have disobeyed the laws of the state, you are suffering. So this is a morning walk. So that's the general reason people are suffering in this world. They've done something in a previous life, and now they're getting the fruits of that, what they did. The pain they gave out is now coming back to them. And that's one reason why as devotees, we feel equal compassion for the victim as we do for the perpetrator. We feel equal compassion for the animals in the slaughterhouse, or the children being aborted, or the women and the elderly and the weak being hurt, as we do for the perpetrators, because we know for the perpetrators, it's all about to begin. Their suffering will be even worse, because the crime is the crime and the punishment are not equal. If I steal £50 from you, the punishment is not that I return £50. I have to return the £50 and I have to give a fine. So we know that the perpetrators, they're even in worse trouble than their victims. So we feel compassion for everyone. So let's go back to this purport we're on today. Let's read it together, please. Hear your own voices with Prabhupada. Yudhisthira should not think that he had committed sins in his previous birth and is suffering the consequence. Even the most pious has to suffer the condition of material nature. So Prabhupada is telling us what Bhishma's, the import of Bhishma's verse, the verse of Bhishma's statement is. When Bhishma says it's his inevitable time, he's really telling Yudhisthira, don't blame yourself, you've done nothing. That you're not suffering due to past sins, you're not suffering due to present sins. You are blameless, because Yudhisthira is blaming himself. And in this verse, Bhishma is reassuring him, you are blameless. And then he says, even the most pious has to suffer the condition of material nature. So most pious, if I was to put that in my own words, I would say he means even the Mahabhagavatas, because there's no one more pious than the Mahabhagavatas. Even they have to suffer the condition of material nature. That's the way I would understand it. So let's carry on. Now, this is an evidence. Let's read this together. This is from Bhagavatam 1.8.4 purport. Not only does the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead act on the conditioned soul within this material world, but sometimes it also acts on the most advanced learned scholars who factually know the constitutional position of this material world through realization. Illusion caused by the material energy acts especially on the conditioned souls, but it sometimes also acts on liberated souls as well. So here we're hearing on the most... sorry, I keep getting this pop-up. Here Prabhupada doesn't say Mahabhagavatas. He says most advanced learned scholars. So that to me means Jnana Yogis who are liberated on the Brahma Buddha platform. They're the Jnanis. So even those who are liberated sometimes have to suffer. Let's see why the liberated souls. Prabhu was saying how Abhin Krishna was making a distinction between the non-conditioned souls, practicing devotees, and liberate and the Mahabhagavatas. I think this is also making another very fine distinction. Those practicing devotees who have achieved liberation come to the Brahma Buddha platform. There's a distinction amongst advanced devotees. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopalananda Sitaram Lakshmana Hanuman Shri Shri Ganita. Not all advanced devotees are on the same platform. Advanced devotee Uttam Bhakti starts at Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, but it ends at Mahabhav. So here it's saying even those who've achieved liberation, and the Jnanis can achieve liberation, even they sometimes have to suffer. So let's see why they might suffer. Let's carry on reading with this evidence. And we can read it together. Because of association with the modes of material nature for a very long time, even liberated souls sometimes become captivated by the illusory energy due to inattentiveness in the transcendental position. Therefore, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 7.14, Mam eva ye prapajyante mayam etam tarantite. Only those who surrender unto me overcome the influence of the material energy. So what I'm getting from this is that, and in fact, anyone who's practicing Krishna consciousness correctly, if we're surrendering, we're all liberated. If we're surrendering, Krishna says, I protect you from your sins. But even amongst those of us who are surrendering to Krishna and we're being protected from sins, some of us will suffer. Even those who get to Brahma Bhuta, some will suffer. And the reason is that at the stage of liberation, we may still get captivated by the illusory energy. We may still start glancing at her and thinking, oh, is there any enjoyment there? So Let's read what Prabhupada says. Therefore, no one should think of himself as a liberated person, immune to the influence of Maya. Everyone should very cautiously execute devotional service by rigidly following regulative principles. Thus, he will remain fixed at the lotus feet of the Lord. Otherwise, a little inattention will create havoc. We have already seen an example of this in the case of Maharaj Bharat. So Prabhupada is saying, yes, if you're practicing, you're liberated. If you got to to Brahmabhutta, you're liberated. But don't sit on your laurels. Don't think, I'm being protected by Krishna now, or I'm liberated, because then you'll become inattentive. And you're still, you know, you're not in the soup yet, still, but you're close to the hot soup. You could still fall back in. You're not in the water of the ocean, but you could fall back in again. So don't be inattentive and think, I don't need to practice my hearing and chanting. I don't need to discuss Prabhupada's books. I don't need to chant my rounds because now I'm liberated. Because you could very easily fall back into a problem. And he gives the example of Maharaj Bharat. So let's just read a bit more about Maharaj Bharat. We can read together. For those engaged in devotional service, bhakti bhajan, the results of past deeds are indemnified. According to this, Bharat Maharaj could not be punished for his past misdeeds. The conclusion must be that Maharaj Bharat purposefully became over-addicted to the deer and neglected his spiritual advancement. To immediately rectify his mistake, for a short time, he was awarded the body of a deer. This was just to increase his desire for mature devotional service. So if we're doing bhakti bhajan, bhajan means our practices of sadhana. You know, Prabhupada set it up for us. We do the morning program, the morning bhajan. We chant our 16 rounds and we study Bhagavatam. And in the evening, we do our evening prayers, Gaura Aarti, and we study Bhagavad Gita. This is the basic, if you go lower than this, we're in trouble. This is the rope. This is our safety net. This is the minimum bhakti bhajan. That morning prayers, morning japa, morning Bhagavatam, evening prayers, evening Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada's saying, if we're doing this, we're indemnified. Means the sins of our past cannot touch us. So Maharaj Bharat was doing these things. He was doing his full sadhana. So how did he suffer? And Prabhupada explains, because he allowed himself to become attached to the deer and allowed his attachment for the deer to compromise his bhajan. So we can learn a lesson from this. We're doing our bhajan, but then if we allow ourselves to become attached to that career, we've got to get ahead in our career or our studies or to... family life doesn't have to be against bhajan. We do bhajan at home. But if we allow things, ambitions, and society, and friendship, and all our social commitments to make us compromise our sadhana, we could fall again, just like Maharaj Bharat did. So we have to be very careful. It's not that we can't have other things, but we should never compromise our basic, ground-level, essential sadhana. Otherwise, like Maharaj Bharat, we might fall again. And that falling, it's very interesting, Prabhupada says, to immediately rectify his mistake, for a short time he was awarded the body of the deer. This was just to increase his desire for mature devotional service. So if we have ever been very committed to our sadhana, and then we allow some material attachment to compromise our sadhana, it's not that Krishna gives up on us. He may give us a short bit of suffering, but that short bit of suffering is also for our good. It's to make us snap out of it. It's to make us realize, you know, I've got to remain serious and become more serious about my sadhana. Just like with Maharaj Bharat. It was one life as a deer. And then after that, Maharaj Bharat was super serious about his sadhana. So for a devotee who's practiced any length, suffering is not inauspicious. At best, it's a reminder. Don't get lax. So we're going back to the purport we're studying today. We can read it together. But a pious man is faithful to the Lord for he is guided by the bona fide Brahman and Vaishnav, following the religious principles. These three guiding principles should be the aim of life. So faithful, a pious man is someone who doesn't have loads of sins from their past life. Faithlessness is a symptom of past sins. When doubts arise in my heart, Prabhupada describes doubts in different ways. One, he describes as a symptom of intelligence. That's another kind of doubt. When I'm studying Prabhupada's books, I'm not a blind follower. I question, what does Prabhupada mean by this? I don't quite understand. It doesn't make sense. That's a symptom of intelligence, that you're not just reading. Prabhupada says doubts is a symbol of intelligence, a symptom. That kind of doubt is very good. If it doesn't make sense to you, then to say, well, this doesn't make sense, that's okay. This is a different kind of doubt. This is the kind of doubt where, should I be even practicing Krishna consciousness? Does Krishna exist? Can Krishna help me? Is there a God? You know, does chanting his names make any difference? That kind of doubt is a reaction to past sins. Because if we don't have past sins, if we're pious, then we're very faithful to Krishna. We have complete trust in him. So sometimes our trust wavers. That's simply a reaction we're receiving from past sins. So Prabhupada is saying that if you are pious, you're very faithful to the Lord. You completely trust him. And how does piety is created? It's created because we're guided by the bona fide Brahman and Vaishnavas. So guided means we're taking instructions. We're hearing from. How does piety develop in us? We have to hear from bona fide. In an easy journey to other planets, Prabhupada gives a definition of the bona fide spiritual master. There's Brahmins and there's bona fide Brahmins. So bona fide in Easy Journey to Other Planets, and I'm sorry I didn't put it up as one of my evidences, but Prabhupada says, a bona fide spiritual master, these are some of his symptoms. And I don't know if my husband has a smartphone, he can even find it if he can, so we can read it aloud. But he says, bona fide, he has an established, he's learned in the Vedas, he's self-realized, and he has an established relationship with Krishna. And whenever you find it, if you find it, you can tell us. So it's Easy Journey to Other Planets. So how do we develop this piety and this strong faith in Krishna, this strong trust? We have to hear from such a personality. And such a personality is here for us in his purports. Prabhupada is learned in the Vedas. He is self-realized. He knows he's not this body. He doesn't lament or hanker for material things. And he has an established relationship with Krishna. So if we take guidance from Prabhupada in his purports and lectures, faith and piety will develop in us. Then Prabhupada finishes this little section by saying, these three guiding principles should be the aim of life. So he's referring to the previous sentence, and he's saying, in the previous sentence, I've given you three guiding principles. I must admit, I was a little confused with that, and I had to ask my husband, what does Prabhupada mean? So this is my husband's light. Before I tell you my husband's light, which I agreed with, how do you understand? Rather than pick on the women, I'm going to encourage the women to speak first, because we're not used to speaking, and we have to learn to repeat what Prabhupada is saying. We have to learn to express our understanding. If we don't repeat, we don't assimilate. So how would you unpack or understand these three guiding principles? Which three guiding principles do you think he's referring to? Any of the ladies? Okay. Any of the men? Oh, okay, Jayanti.
I think he talks about Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra.
Okay. You're thinking he's referring to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Because he says these, that's what confused me, that he's just referred to them. But you think he's just referred to Guru, Sadhu, Shastra.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Yes. Any of the men have a different or additional understanding? Anyone? Okay, so I'm going to share my husband's understanding. He said, to be faithful to Krishna, Because the pious man is faithful to Krishna, to trust Krishna, to trust him, to trust his all goodness, to trust his arrangements, even when it doesn't make sense to us. And we're thinking, why, Krishna, why? To trust him. To be guided by bona fide Brahmins and Vaishnavas to study Prabhupada's books. And to follow religious principles. So to do the do-nots and the do's, and to do the duties of our own ashram and our own varna. So if we're guided, not that yours was wrong, yours was also very nice, but this was our light. Our understanding was, don't neglect this. Cultivate your trust in Krishna, or have trust in Krishna. Take guidance from Prabhupada and his books. Study his books and try to understand them. And act. Do your duties. Duties include the four do-nots, no eating meat, fish, eggs, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, chanting our 16 rounds, but also our ashram and varna duties. Stick to religious principles. And Prabhupada said this should be the aim of life. So we understood that means these three things should be our policy in life. They should guide us in life. Oop. So let's go to the next one. So this is the next bit of the purport. And I'm actually run out of time, so shall I stop? What do you want me to do? Anyone can guide me? Okay. So we can read together. One should not be disturbed by the tricks of eternal time. Even the great controller of the universe, Brahmaji, is also under the control of that time. Therefore, one should not grudge being thus controlled by time, despite being a true follower of religious principles. Yes. So, I'm going to go a little bit faster so that I can finish quickly. What I understand here is, as well as sinful people, surrendered devotees who neglect their duties may also suffer, but even fully surrendered and very diligent devotees, even Mahabhagavats may suffer due to the influence of time. So one who's not committing sin and not negligent shouldn't lament that they're suffering, nor should they resent their suffering. So they shouldn't resent because they should trust Krishna's doing this for a very good reason. I resent something if I think ultimately it's going to harm me or it wasn't fair. But Prabhupada's saying, a faithful devotee doesn't resent. He knows Krishna has a very good reason. He may not understand the reason, but he trusts Krishna. So let's move on a little bit. This is evidence. We can read together. O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord, Sri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. So I'm stealing Dalnitai's thunder. He's giving class on this verse in 2 days' time. But this is from the purport of text 16. This is the verse. So sometimes we may not be able to understand why we're suffering. We may think I'm acting piously, I'm studying Prabhupada's books, I'm chanting attentive rounds, I'm doing my duties, I'm not neglecting anything. Why am I suffering? And Prabhupada's saying, sometimes it's not possible to work it out, but you have to trust Krishna. Just trust him. And that's what it means to be faithful, that when I can't figure it out, I trust. Let's carry on. So from that same purport, though the Pandavas couldn't figure it out, and though Bhishma couldn't figure it out, subsequently Acharyas have given us a clue why the Pandavas were suffering. So that's from that purport. Let's quickly read it. The sufferings of the Pandavas were never due to their past deeds. The Lord had to execute the plan of establishing the kingdom of virtue, and therefore his own devotees suffered temporarily in order to establish the conquest of virtue. So he allowed the Pandavas to suffer just for a short time because that was part of his plan to establish virtue in the world. And a devotee always wants to serve the Lord, so he doesn't resent it. I'm part of Krishna's mission. He doesn't resent it. This is from another purport I just wanted to share with you. Why doesn't a devotee resent it? Because I'd resent it, frankly, if Krishna made me suffer just to teach someone else a lesson. But the pure devotees don't resent it. So this is an evidence maybe to shed some light on that. Let's read it together. The result of such hearing is detachment from worldliness, so much so that even a small boy could receive the death news of his mother, who was his only caretaker, as the blessing of God. So he's talking about Narada Muni. This is a purport where Prabhupada's talking about Narada Muni. So because Narada had been hearing very diligently from the Bhaktivedantas, and he continued his hearing even after they left, and he continued his Shravanam Kirtanam, he was detached from worldliness. We only suffer when something we're attached to, we don't get it, or we lose it. But if through hearing about Krishna and developing a taste for hearing about Krishna, we will develop detachment from name, fame, adoration, distinction, society, friendship and love, wealth, position. And if we're not attached to them, if we don't get them or they're taken away from us, they don't suffer. Actually, devotees like the Yudhisthira don't suffer. Very temporarily, Krishna allowed him to experience suffering just so that he would go and hear from Bhishma. But really, pure devotees internally don't suffer because they're detached. So that's why they're not resentful. Whereas someone like me, I'd be like, oh, well, why me? For his sake. So, what lessons can we learn? I was going to let you all say your lessons, and if we're allowed to have more time, I will let you tell you your lessons. But I just wanted to take some lessons that I felt I could learn from this purport. It's very important that we try to take a lesson for our own lives from Prabhupada's purport, something that we can take into our life. So I learned two lessons from this, is don't judge others. If I see someone else suffering, don't think, oh, it's because they're neglecting their spiritual life or because they're really sinful. It may be for those reasons, but I really don't know. They may be a Mahabhagavat for all I know, and Krishna's using them to teach me a lesson. I really don't know. So we really shouldn't be focused on judging others and kind of like thinking they're getting their just desserts. They may not be getting their just desserts. They may be being used by Krishna for our purification. So not to judge others, because it's hard to understand why someone is suffering. That's one lesson I learned. And the second lesson I learned is, as a spiritual practitioner, don't be negligent in my hearing and chanting. Because that is one reason, as a spiritual practitioner, I could end up suffering. Just like Maharaj Bharat. Maharaj Bharat ended up suffering because he was negligent. So hearing and chanting, whatever other services you do, wonderful. But it shouldn't be done at the cost of our own personal practice of bhajan. And I wanted to give you a couple of evidences for this. So this is a room conversation with Srila Prabhupada, and two devotees went out to do deity worship. They went to buy flowers or get flowers or something for the deities. And Prabhupada was very disturbed that they minimized their hearing and chanting to go for the flowers. And this is what he says. Let's read it together. If you are not interested in association, discussion, then you are finished. So, kamis, they are fools and rascals. When you have got this center, it is not that you should be engaged from morning till you go to bed for sense gratification. That is not life. That is Kami's life. You have no time for satsanga, for association. You cannot make any progress by this sort of Kami's life. We have to work for organization, but not that whole day and night engaged and no satsanga. That is a misguided policy, and it will spoil the whole structure. In Los Angeles, they regularly assemble during aarti and class. If this requisite principle is lost, then you are kamis. They must come back by 6 o'clock, suspending all other duties, and assemble by 7 o'clock. Joint mess program is not good. You bring some money, and spend jointly for eating, sleeping. That is called joint mess. You know the joint mess, this word? What is its meaning? So that this is another evidence. So there Prabhupada is saying, yes, we have to work for organization. But if we in any way neglect our hearing and chanting, our so-called devotional service will actually become Kami's life. We may be working hard like anything, managing, organizing, doing, distributing. But if we're neglecting our own hearing and chanting, it's all Kami. life. It's all ultimately sense grasping. You're looking for name, fame, adoration, looking for, you know, you're maintaining your own eating and sleeping. Only it becomes devotional service if we're hearing and chanting a full ISKCON sandwich every day and doing it properly. So I'm promising this is our mission. So there's another evidence very similar to it on another occasion. Let's read this together. So this is difficulty that we're not very much interested in hearing. And that is the main business. Our bhakti begins, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, 7523. We have to hear and we have to speak. But if we're not interested in hearing and speak, then it will be the same Thakur Bari, simply formula. That's all. And gradually it will be stopped. Unless there is life of Shravanam Kirtanam, these big, big building temples will become burden. So if we want to create burden for future, then we may give up this hearing and chanting and sleep very nicely. It's very interesting. Prabhupada says, hear and speak. This is why I keep encouraging ladies. Repeat what you're hearing. Because passive hearing will not help us. There's another evidence where Prabhupada says, to hear and explain is more important than just reading. Because without explaining what we're reading, we do not assimilate. There are many evidences I have on a webpage called improvingsangha.wordpress.com, which makes this point. Without repeating what we're hearing, we will not assimilate. And just going in this ear and out that ear, that is not bhajan. That is not going to help us. It has to go into the heart. And that happens when we hear and repeat, speak. And Prabhupada says, this is our main business. Our main business is not distributing. I'm not trying to stop distribution. Please don't think I've got anything against, but book distribution is a very important part of our business. But it's the second half. The first half is save ourselves. You know, because then when we save other people, we're bringing them into a society where they will actually be saved. We're not going to bring them into a society where people are frustrated and depressed and, you know, unhappy. We'll bring them into a society where people are actually happy. So we have to practice properly ourselves. This is part of the same quote we were just reading. We'll just finish it. It will be burden, galagraha, please read. Not Shri Vigraha, but galagraha, galagraha. Shri Vigraha means worshipable deity. So if we give up this Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu, then it will be thought that our Guru Maharaj has given a burden in the neck, galagraha. This is the danger. So we must be very much alert in Shravanam Kirtanam. Otherwise, all this labor will be futile. This building will be only the nest for the doves and the pigeons. That is the danger. That is being done. Nobody is interested. So all our big, big buildings, our elaborate deity worship, our big programs, our festivals, if we're neglecting our own hearing and chanting, one day we'll think, oh, God, that was such a burden. And we won't be able to bring in the next generation of people willing to sustain such a burden. People are only going to want to come if we're going to make them happy. Not if we're going to say, let me pass my burden on to you. Suffer. No, we have to become happy. And then others will come to learn how to be happy. So that's it for me. I don't know if there's time for any of you to make your comments, what you take from it, or ask your questions. Is there time? Should I stop or should I give time for anyone else to speak? Okay, since a couple of more minutes, thank you. Anyone would like to make any comments or share with me what you take from it or ask any questions? Go ahead, Cyrus.
My appreciation for your dedication in driving home this message.
Thank you.
Of Shradham Kirtanam. And it still feels very new to me still in terms of listening, because I don't know what that is, listening skills. I don't have that. So it's like I have to rewire my brain or something. But you're doing that. You're helping me to tune in.
Great.
To that. And even though I'm sort of trying to practice this, nowhere near, but I thank you anyway, because this is so useful and so practical.
Thank you.
The way you explain the whole thing, and in a way that we should, you know, you're leaving impressions in our heart.
Yes.
And on our heads, and how we should
practice. Thank you very much,
nicely.
Cyrus.
Thank you.
We're going to keep working on your hearing skills. It is skills. You're completely right. It is a skill. Most time when people hear, they're hearing to reply. They're not hearing. They're hearing to make their point. They're just waiting for the other person to shut up so they can say what they want to say. And it's actually a skill to be able to hear what is actually being said. It's a skill that we have to cultivate and be taught like any other skill. Thank you very much.